Welcome to Legend Lore with Luis and Lorne, where we talk about Pathfinder 2nd Edition.
I'm Luis, and I'm a developer at Paizo working on the Pathfinder Lost Omens line. I've been playing tabletop RPGs for over 15 years, and I've written for dozens of Pathfinder products. I'm also the GM for Valiant, and I write the Monsters Physique blog here on the No Direction Network.
And I'm Lauren, your Dova Queen, and I've been playing RPGs for almost 20 years. I write the Bend the Knee blog here on No Direction, and you can also watch me play in the Adventurous and Three Ring Adventure podcasts. Now, this episode's a little bit different than your normal run of Legend Lore, and that's because this is the final part. This is the third part in a three-part series where we introduce people to role-playing games. We talk about Pathfinder if you're coming from other games. And then this episode, we're going to give you tips and tricks from our hearts to yours and from the listeners who have provided them.
Yeah, we're basically assuming at this point you had a chance to play some Pathfinder, and we're hoping to provide just little tips that will help you out. It's impossible to know the entire rules all the way through. Believe me, as someone who works on Pathfinder, even I don't have the entire core rulebook memorized, so maybe these little tips and tricks will teach you something you didn't know or remind you of one of those obscure rules to help you out in play. We hope that this will be an evergreen episode that you can come back to at any time after you've played Pathfinder and still learn a few things.
And if you want any full discussions on a given subject, you know, we might already have that covered in depth. Check out the backlog of content we have here on Legend Lore. And if there's something that you'd like us to cover that we haven't covered, let us know. So put that down in the comments or come on the Discord and tell us how we're doing.
Well, there's not much structure to this episode because we're just detailing a bunch of fun tips and stuff, and we'll maybe discuss them a little as we bring them up. So I figured maybe we'll break things down like how they are broken down in the core rulebook chapter by chapter. And I think the very first thing is the introduction, which talks about character creation. So we'll get into those tips, and then we'll go with further tips as we go along. The first tip I have for you with character creation is something I've seen a lot of people miss. Don't forget that after you've done your ancestry boost and your background boosts and your class boosts, that you get an extra 4 free boosts to use wherever you want. Those are the ones that you use to get your, to kind of round out your scores and kind of fill in stuff that maybe your character would, you would like your character to do but haven't had a chance to provide any boosts for. So look on page 26. That is step 6 of the character creation. It says you get 4 more ability boosts to your character's ability scores. Don't forget those.
All right, Luis. I know about flaws. I know that we take 2 minuses to give ourselves 1 boost, right? So 2 penalties, 1 boost. Tell me more about it, though. There's more to it than just that.
Yeah, the flaws that you're referring to are an optional rule on that same page, page 26, that said, you know, you might want to give yourself a boost to something you haven't had a chance to, and if you want, you could choose to get a flaw, a voluntary flaw, in which you take a penalty to specific two ability scores and boost up something else. So this is a way that you can kind of maybe make your dwarf that has a really high charisma, you take flaws in a few other things and shore up that charisma, or just give yourself a few extra flaws for more role-playing reasons if you're interested. It's up to you. It from what I understand, is completely balanced against everything else, so it's not going to make your character absolutely god-tier broken or anything. You're obviously going to be a little worse off because you have more flaws, but it's there for you to play with, to fiddle around with your ability scores just a little bit more.
Keep in mind, though, even with flaws, I don't think there's still a way to start out with more than an 18 in any one score. So yeah, you're not going to get that much min-maxing out of it.
Yeah, and I don't think there's any way to go below a 8 with the voluntary flaws either. So you're not going to absolutely hamper your character either.
So another thing to think about is when you're choosing your languages for your character, keep in mind that all of the languages on the languages page, that's not like every language on Galarian, right? Like there are monster languages. If you have some reason that like you should be able to speak Sphinx, and talk to your GM about it. There's no reason they wouldn't give that to you.
Yeah, and it also applies to whatever campaign you might be running in. So if you're in a campaign that happens to deal a lot with sphinxes for whatever reason, your GM will probably hopefully tell you about that and give that as an option for you. Next up, this is a tip that I think applies to all feats, but it happens to link up with the ancestry feats first, is that feats have a level, and that level is a prerequisite. You have to be at least level 4 to take a 4th level feat, for example. But that is not the level you absolutely need to be to take it. If you want, you can take a lower level feat at any time with a higher level feat. So if 10th level rolls around and there was a lower level feat, like a 1st or 2nd or 4th level feat that you wanted, you can use your new feat that you gain at 10th level to take that lower level feat. As long as you are at least that level, you can take that feat at any time. So don't feel like you're absolutely obligated to take the latest and greatest feats that show up with your new level.
For the classes section, I think it's pretty straightforward. The only notes I could give you is that as a fighter, you're going to have a better 2-hit. As a barbarian, your burst damage is probably going to be better. And as a champion, you're probably going to have better AC than everyone else, just by the way the math works out. But the big thing that you might not be realizing is you can't find the section for the stats on your familiar because they don't have any attacks. Like, you just can't do it, right? Like, you can't send Scruffy over there to go bite. Now, keep in mind, I'm saying familiars here. It's all perfectly laid out for an animal companion attacks, obviously.
Yeah, any class stuff, we've probably already talked about it in our class-specific episode, so go check those out. Let's move on to some skills. Skills, there's a lot of them. A few things to note. One thing is perception is not a skill anymore, so you can't boost it up the way you can with your training for other skills. So the only way to get your perception better is to take, I think there's a specific general feat you can take to do that. Otherwise, your class will tell you when your perception gets better. That's it.
Another thing to keep in mind is that all of the skills, and we talk about this in the skill episode too, but let's just go into it real quick. All skills, that was the initiative episode. Yes. All skills can be used for initiative. Mm-hmm. So if you start the fight by reciting poetry, maybe your GM will let you roll performance for initiative. And on top of that, if you need to learn something about a particular dead poet's work to try and solve the case of the missing loot, maybe your GM will let you use recall knowledge as a performance skill.
Yeah, any skill can be used for recall knowledge. I think one example we gave when the game was first coming out is possibly using athletics to know something about, like, a particular way to tie a rope or something. Who knows? It's a fun thing. Roleplay it out, figure it out, but know that recall knowledge is a general use for all skills. Another thing that's kind of open to a lot more people now, if you're coming in from first edition, you might be used to having to take the specific feats that let you do a grapple or a trip without provoking attacks of opportunity. You don't have to worry about any of that anymore. All of these combat maneuvers, if you will, grabbing and tripping and disarming, are open to anyone that's trained with athletics. If you're pumping your athletics, you're probably going to do well at these, so feel free to use those whenever you want, whenever you think it makes sense. It's pump athletics, and you can do whatever you want with your combat maneuvers.
What I like about that is that back in the day, if you wanted to be good at tripping people, you had to take like a trillion feats to do it. Like, all of your feats were for tripping people. And now you're a one-trip pony. You walk up to somebody, you trip them, and then you finish your business with them. But that's the nice thing about 2E. All the characters in 2E have more options because everything is open to them. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be broke at everything, because everything's also pretty balanced. One maneuver tends to be as viable as another, you know? Yeah. It's really cool. But speaking of feats, I want you to realize, folks at home, right? Especially folks that are really liking the skill feats, that you can use your general feat to take another skill feat. That I know of, this is... No, I can't say this is the only feat that operates like that, because you can use your class feat to take art type and dedication feats. But, yeah.
Yeah. It's Speaking of feats, let's talk about assurance. Assurance is a very useful feat for most anyone, I feel. Assurance specifically says, here, let's read it. Even in the worst circumstances, you can perform basic tasks. Choose a skill you're trained in, and you can forego rolling a skill check for that skill, and instead receive a result of 10 plus your proficiency bonus. So if you are trained in something and your level's 5, that would be a plus 7 proficiency bonus for a total of 17. That's it. And it specifically calls that you don't apply any bonuses, penalties, or modifiers. So you can use this as your third attack action to maybe trip someone with athletics, or you can use it when you are clumsy and worried about balancing. Your acrobatics assurance will ignore the penalties from clumsy. It's just a flat number. Here's what you get. And it's very good at doing generally difficult to kind of hard skills, depending on how good you are in that given skill. So at very high levels, you can do pretty ridiculous stuff just flat out without even having to worry about a roll.
If you're gonna only be trained in something, I'd maybe sleep on assurance, but if you're planning to take that skill all the way up to master or legendary, do not sleep on it. This will pay dividends in the long run. Yep. A note about equipment. So weight is a lot easier in this edition. You no longer have to put on your little financer's hat and audit your books to get your weight down. It's all bulk now, right? Like you got 1 bulk, 2 bulk, 3 bulk, whatever, and you can carry whatever your bulk is. And then you also have light items. So instead of it being like 0.5 or 0.6 pounds, you just have light. It's a light item. 10 light items count as 1 bulk, which means that 9 light items count as absolutely nothing. So don't even worry about it until you get to 10 of them.
Yeah, I have had characters whose equipment burden is at 5 bulk, and they had 4 bulk and 9 light items, and it was still fine. We have a tip here from our patron, Dom, who points out, hey, armor proficiency and AC also increase every level, and that's an important thing tied to the proficiency system. It's very easy to remember, oh, every time I level up, my attacks go up and my skills go up, but anything that uses proficiency, you're trained or expert, blah, blah, in anything, it will go up. That includes AC. So if you feel like you're falling behind in AC, it might be that you missed that going up. It does go up every level. Or you might be confused as to how your AC went up all of a sudden if you're using a virtual tabletop and it does it for you. It's because, hey, your level got factored into all of that. So don't forget, you don't want to get hit with that. Include your level on your AC.
And this is the reason that in the new edition, it's a little bit harder to kind of fight outside your weight class, right? Like, if you used proper planning and you had the equipment you needed, you could take down a really hoss enemy way above your CR back in the day. Now, because the way you crit people for getting 10 over a DC, which includes AC, you get crit more often. But this now, you level up one more time, okay? You're 5% harder to hit, but more importantly, you're 5% less likely to get crit. Keep that in mind. All right, let's talk about spells. From our patron foe clan, the refocus action exists. So anytime you have 10 minutes to spare, you can get your focus points back. Now, there's a lot of really important spells, y'all, that use focus points. For example, Lay on Hands, you know? Every 10 minutes, you get a free burst of Lay on Hands.
Yeah, I guess I've heard stories of a lot of people not realizing you can get those spells back, and that's exactly what they're for. Just use them as often as you can, as long as you get a little bit of a break between your encounters. So don't forget to refocus. The game rules will tell you exactly how you refocus. You might be praying, you might be reading your book, but everyone uses the same refocus action.
Also, keep in mind when you're looking at spells that a lot of spells now remain useful all the way from 1 to 10 if you keep looking at them and checking that they have heightened conditions. For example, Long Strider, right? You're like, sure, Long Strider's fine. I get plus 30 to speed for a while. But a level 2 Long Strider, You're not going to get that for 8 hours. So, like, just look at these things, you know? Just, like, make sure you know what you've got. That way, when you hit higher levels, you don't forget that you needed a spell from back in the day.
Yeah, another similarly useful tip here is that your DC scales with all of your spells. If you're coming in from first edition, you might be used to your first level spells having a lower DC than your third level and so on. No, your DC is flat across all your spells. So if you have a first level spell that you think might be helpful in something, go ahead and use it. The DC is going to be just as tough as your 10th level spells, and that might mean you might still get a lot of use out of it, even if it's just your first level slot.
A good example of that, the command spell, right? Like, it's first level, it's pretty good, and you can cast it at first level, and it can have the DC of your highest level spell, you know?
So, let's talk about playing the game. One of the big things that happened a lot in first edition is flanking. And in flanking in first edition granted you a +2 bonus to attacks. Here in second edition, flanking people makes them flat-footed against anyone involved in the flank. But if you need to make someone flat-footed, perhaps you have a rogue or you just want it an easier time hitting your target, flanking isn't the only way to make someone flat-footed. There's a number of conditions here. Looking here, you can make someone confused, or you can be hidden to the target, you can grab them, you can paralyze them, which at that point, if they're paralyzed, I mean, what are they going to do? But the other big thing is you can knock them prone, so tripping someone makes them flat-footed, and then you can take advantage of all of that. So there's a lot of ways to do that. There's a lot of spells that kind of do that, and just don't assume that flanking is the only way to get your bonuses in and your strategy going on in combat.
Don't forget that hero points are baked into the system by default. The vanilla rules assume you have hero points. And the reason I say it like that is because I know previous editions of tabletop role-playing games have had rules that are similar to hero points, but were optional. And I know a lot of GMs hear optional and they go, no, I don't want that in my game, regardless of what it is. Hero points are not optional. I mean, this is a role-playing game. Anything's optional if you want it to be, right? But it is assumed that you are playing with hero points. So don't forget them. And also, don't forget that you should get awarded hero points, you know? If you feel like something might be worth a hero point, maybe remind your GM. Look, GMs have a lot going on, all right? Help them out sometimes. Hey, that was really cool. Do you think it'd be worth a hero point?
Speaking of GMs, here's one thing I want all GMs to hear. Building encounters is very different in Pathfinder 2nd Edition. The Game Mastering chapter gives you the breakdown of, you know, what level a monster is and how much XP it's worth. But I feel like it's very hard to recognize something I've seen a lot of people have problems with. So I'm going to tell you now. A single high-level monster is very, very powerful compared to the rest of the party. A monster that is 2 levels higher is probably pretty tough, but anything that's 3 levels higher or more is going to be almost devastating. A third level, or a level +3 monster might be capable of taking out an entire party member on their own, and the party will have a real tough time doing it, taking this monster down. So if you want a single really tough monster, go ahead and go for it. But if you just want a tough fight, my recommendation is, instead of having one tough monster, having a few more slightly less tough monsters. Give more enemies rather than one tough enemy, because math here is serious business, and a really tough monster is going to do a lot of damage.
That's right. And if you want to get the drop on that monster, you have to realize that there aren't surprise rounds anymore. Now, we talked about this a bit in our initiative episode, so if you still have questions, please go check that out. But just because there's not surprise rounds, I'll summarize, doesn't mean there's not surprise. And this is another thing. Look, GMs have a lot going on. They're very good. We love our GMs. But since there's so much, it's okay to remind them that even though there's not a surprise round, you could award a bonus of +1 or +2 to our initiative because we clearly got the drop on the enemy.
Another thing to help you out with tough monsters is debuffs and buffs. You know, cast your heroism, do your flat-footed conditions on the monsters, but keep in mind all of these have some kind of condition type. Your bonus or penalty type, excuse me. So they will either be item bonuses or circumstance bonuses or status bonuses, and be mindful that those don't stack. So if you are granting a plus one status bonus to the party and then something else grants a plus two status bonus to the party, know that that is not a plus three, that is just a plus two. You take the higher bonus and same, you take the biggest penalty. So as fun as it sounds like you can maybe throw a bunch of things, throw a bunch of fear and frightening and all this stuff, it's not all gonna work that way. So you have to be very mindful and very strategic about which bonuses and penalties you're using in combat.
Something else to keep in mind for in combat and being mindful of what you're doing, your third action, right? Like, it's really tempting to just, I've got three actions, he's right in front of me, I full attack, 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 attack. But your first attack's gonna be fine. Your second attack's gonna be at -5, unless you prepared for this and you've got agile or some rangel stuff going on. And if you don't have that stuff, then your third attack is at -10. Y'all, your odds of hitting with this are real rough. Do something different with your third action. Maybe roll aid, you know? Say, I attack twice, and then I use my last action to, I'm gonna help my ally. I'm gonna shove the enemy off balance, to give my friend some help. What that means is that on your friend's turn, you're gonna use your reaction to aid. Aiding with an attack means you make an attack roll. Since it's not your turn, you don't have the multi-attack penalty. Does that make sense? So really try to think about what else you can do with that third action so you're not just throwing minus tens out and fishing for 20s, right?
Few quick recommendations. Maybe reposition. You can stride to move somewhere else. Maybe raise a shield. Or if you have assurance, maybe you can use your assurance to try to trip them or grab them. Who knows?
Who knows?
Speaking of your multiple attack penalty, I'm just going to reiterate a thing you just said. There is no multiple attack penalty outside of your turn. If you are taking an attack of opportunity, even though you did three attacks your previous turn, you are doing it at your full bonus. If you are doing, for some reason, some other thing that has triggered an attack with a reaction, you are doing it at your full bonus. The only exception that I can think of is if you intentionally readied an action to attack and then, your reaction goes off. That still has your multiple attack penalty multiple attack penalty factored in.
Does
That's
it?
specifically called out in the rules. It says
Oh.
this unlike the other times when you use a reaction, this does include a multiple attack penalty, but they made sure to specify that, yes, this is an exception to it, which reinforces the fact that your multiple attack penalty is kind of ignored outside of your turn. So take advantage of that stuff.
All right, some tips from our patrons. Andrew Mullen, you need to pay more attention to fights because they're harder. So one of the I've got some more thoughts about this, but I'm going to save them for a little bit later in this episode because I want to have a discussion about it. But it's you definitely have to have more wise tactical decisions in fights. A lot of this is going to be more leaning on each other and more teamwork. Combat is not usually pretty easy. Combat is usually pretty deadly in this edition, so you got to be careful.
Yep. Another one from our user. Eric, Norse Foundry Crew, specifically calls out level-dependent DCs. And specifically, they're bringing attention to the DC level chart for GM. So a lot of things in the game will say, oh, roll a thing against a standard DC or a hard DC for your level. And you might not know what that is. Or when you try to identify a magic item, what's the DC for the magic item? Well, most everything in this game has a level, and what you can do is turn to the handy little DC by level chart in the core rulebook, page 503, and it says, oh, well, a level 1 DC by default is it's a DC 15. So, like a level 1 item is DC 15, or a hard DC might be that DC plus 2. It has a little chart that adjusts the difficulty. So, let's say you're level 10, a standard DC is DC 27, a hard DC for your level 10 is DC 29. There you go. Look at that chart. It's very useful for everyone. GMs in particular obviously will want to be looking at that more, but know that that's where that lives, and you can work with that to kind of determine the difficulty of anything, even stuff on the fly that might not have a level.
And what I like to think about the standard DC chart, I think it's good to flip the script on it. Like, don't think about our PCs are level 10 and consult the chart. Think about it like this. This situation is level 10, right? Like if you had a slippery puddle, like, in the street, okay? Like, there's just a little bit of ice on Main Street, okay? But you're level 10. Your DC should not be 27. You're not going to fall on your butt. That's like a level 1 challenge. Your DC is going to be level 1, you know?
It's a level 1 puddle.
Yeah, like, so don't be looking at that based on the PCs. Be looking at it based on the hazard. What is the hazard of the DC? If my character was going into a cooking contest at the tavern, you know, maybe this would be like a level 2 like DC. If I was going into a cooking contest that was national and like the entire nation was coming, maybe this would be a level 10 DC, you know? Think about it like that. Don't think about it as the level of the character. Or at least that's just me. From user Char, and I really feel like this one's really going to help new players. From user Char, there are standard actions that everyone can do on page 470 through 472. And the reason I call out new players on this, y'all, is because a lot of times when you're teaching people the game, you're telling them that this game is so awesome because you're not limited by anything but your imagination. You can do whatever you want. If you can think it, you can do it. Well, for a new player, that can be overwhelming. So it might help them to flip open to pages 470 to 472 and just show them, hey, if you're not sure what you can do, take a look at these actions. Everybody can do these.
And additionally, a lot of things in the game call out these actions. So a class feat might say you stride twice, or you try to escape, and it has a capital E escape. Anything that's an action in the game is usually capitalized, so then you can come back here and see exactly what it's referring to, so you know what your general feat or your class feat or whatever is doing at that point. The game assumes these actions all the time. They know that they're built into the way the game works, so just making sure you know what these do can help out with reading a lot of the rest of how the game is going.
From patron Weezicus, actions cannot be split over multiple turns. Now, you're like, when would I try to do this? Well, loading a heavy crossbow for one, right? You can't use your last action on one turn and then your first action on the next one to load that crossbow. Same with trying to get rid of persistent damage, you know? You use two actions to give yourself an easier DC to get rid of persistent damage. No, it gotta be the same turn. We use both actions. You just need to know this. Be thinking about it.
Yeah, specific things will call out. If it has the two action icon or the three action icon, or says it's a two action activity, three action activity, it has to be done that turn. So let's look at your gear and all the cool stuff that you find after your adventure, all your treasure. One thing to note is any item that just has the magical trait means it can be identified with any relevant magic related skill. So you might find a new magic belt, for example, and your GM will look at it and it has, you know, the invested trait and maybe the transmutation trait, and then just has the magical trait. If it's magical, Arcana or nature or occultism or religion can identify what that does. It doesn't care who made that item, who crafted it. If a wizard crafted it, a cleric can still identify it, so on and so forth. There are very specific magic items that will have like the divine trait or the arcane trait, and then you have to use a specific item or the specific skill to identify it. But by default, you can probably assume that you can roll for any item to identify it, so you can help out even if you think the item might not be related to your school of, or your type of magic.
Another tip you might not have realized, because I didn't realize it, is that slots on magic items are no longer a thing. You don't have, like, this occupies my face slot, and this occupies my shoulder slot. Nah, forget about that. If it makes sense that you can wear both of the things, then wear both of the things, right? And let me give you an example, okay? Like, if there was a magical makeup, okay, that in the old days would have occupied the face slot, and if there's like a magical mask that would have occupied the face slot, Sure, wear them both. Who cares? Just as long as you're keeping in mind that you have to invest in a lot of these items, and by default, you can only invest in like 10 items.
Yeah, there are a few items that specifically call out where they're worn. So there are like worn belt items that specifically calls out you can only have one belt on at a time. But for the most part, if it doesn't have that, if it just says usage worn, you can wear as many as you like. That means you can have 50 rings somehow if you want. You might not have them all invested, but you can have all the rings on and get the benefits of a bunch of rings at once, unlike the old days where you could only get 2 rings.
You may be cool, but you'll never be 10 cloaks cool.
So, we have a few other tips looking at the conditions at the end. Know that there are a few conditions, specifically the frightened and sickened conditions, that call out that they reduce your DCs. And DCs include your armor class. So if your DC has gone down, that means your armor class has gone down. When you are scared or when you're on the verge of throwing up, it is a lot easier to hit you. So that also applies for your enemies, though. So maybe frightening someone will be all the difference in being able to hit the monster that you weren't able to hit.
And let's just clarify real quick. Frightened and sickened do stack, don't they?
Let's look. Sickened specifically calls out that you have a status penalty, and frightened calls out that you have a status penalty.
Oh, nope. No stacks. Stack. No stacks.
I'm sorry.
You can't be scared sick. You're either scared or you're sick.
Oh, you can be both. You just won't be taking as bad of a penalty.
That's true.
As you think.
It can only get so bad. Oh, yes. Oh. Yep. Another important thing just to keep mind of, rule 0 is like literally the first rule of the game. It's no longer like some optional thing or just something that we all talk about. No, like, the first rule of Pathfinder is that this game is yours. That's pretty cool.
What, for people who might not know what Rule 0 is, what is Rule 0, Lauren?
Okay, Rule 0, the rule of cool, right? That's what we've always called it, rule of cool. If you like it, run with it. If the rule, if like another rule, if Rule 6, fighters or whatever, doesn't work for you, throw it out, you know? This is just advanced board games. Anytime you sit at the table to play it with someone, you're just there for a good time. And if something is getting in the way with that, throw it out.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you can alter whatever you need in the game. I recommend being a bit more conservative if you're running Pathfinder Society, but there's even a built-in thing to Pathfinder Society that rewards creative play. So it's kind of there as well. Just don't feel like you can throw out the entire rulebook when you're running PFS.
That's right.
Speaking of rules, you're probably going to mess up. I mess up all the time. Or at the very least, don't remember a thing and feel like I have to look it up at the table and stuff. And that's okay. You don't have to have the rules memorized. You don't have to even have every rule for the one monster you're running at that time memorized. Just be okay with referencing things. Be okay with changing your rulings as needed, and be okay with making mistakes and fixing those after the fact.
And in all fairness, if you're a new player at my table, I don't need you to know any rules, right? I kind of prefer that my brand new players don't know anything when they come into the game. I like them to be all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I like them to have just fresh imaginations, capable of pulling crazy stuff out of the rear end. I want to do this and this and this and this and this and this and kiss. Okay. First of all, I love your enthusiasm. Second of all, I think we could do that like this. Let's do it. This turn, you'll do these actions, and this turn, you'll do these actions. You know? It's okay. You know, it's fine. Just have a good time. Rule 0, rule cool.
Speaking of rules, again, an easy way to look these up is, rather than flip through your book or having to do a big find on your PDF, go to Archives of Nethys. The rules are online. They're free. They're up there. You don't even have to own the book to look at them. They're just all there. If you haven't bought Lost Omens Pathfinder Society Guide, but you want to see the cool new swords that are in there, they're there online for free. Use them. Use them at your table. We encourage it. We want people to play this game and just have fun. And we would rather give these rules and let people have fun than hold that all back and gatekeep by having to buy the rules.
All right, Luis. If you had to say one tip was the most important tip, what would be yours?
Okay. This is ultimately in a similar vein of you're going to mess up the rules and that's fine, and rule zero and all that stuff. But as long as there's a few factors that you have to check off here. As long as one, everyone is in agreement, so everyone's consenting, everyone is having fun, and no one is getting upset by what's going on, then you are playing Pathfinder or any RPG correctly.
That's actually really awesome. That's really good for everyone to keep in mind. My I've got one tip too, but mine is going to involve a little bit more of a discussion, I think, because I've seen a lot of folks who are new to second edition, or at least when I was new to second edition, when most of us were, we had a hard time. Like, this system is really deadly, and what feels like it should be a medium encounter or a moderate encounter, these are really tough. Like, the first time I ran my group through anything in PF2, it was a TPK. We killed them all. They all died. And I've seen this running through some of the adventure paths, too. Like, you really start out, like, on death's door with every encounter. So, here's where the discussion part comes in, Luis. I've also seen two variants which address that. And they both seem pretty cool to me. I want to see what you think. With one of them, if the AP calls for your characters to be level 2, you make them level 3. With the other one, you give characters a free class feat at every even level, which can only be spent on archetype stuff.
The free archetype rule.
I love it. Yeah. I love the free archetype rule.
Well, there are two differences there. The free archetype rule will give you typically just more things you can do or more unique things you can do, but it won't shore up the power level. So just know that just the free archetype rules alone might not be enough to like make up for the fact that you're missing like a player. So if you're running a three-party group or three-player group, that might not be enough. The level 2 option being just one level ahead of things probably is going to make things about where most people expect the game to be in terms of like big heroics and stuff, and that's what you want to play, then please go for it. Eventually, once you're past first level, which I think is the deadliest level in the entire game, once you're past first level, things will get slowly easier and easier, and you'll be able to handle things a lot better, and maybe you'll catch up to where the AP expects you to be. If you need to be 10th level by this point, you probably can safely have the party be 10th level at that point, and they'll have enough options, enough things that they can do to make up for all the bad things that happen with die rolls and good monster attacks and stuff.
I agree completely. And I do also agree that it's a slow progression up. Like, at level 1, it's just rough. Everything's killing you. Level 2 is still really tough, but it's not quite as bad. And things start to even out around 3, you know? Yeah, it's something to consider, because that's one of the biggest complaints I've seen people have, and when you see a lot of people with the same complaints, it's hard to say that their opinion isn't valid, you know? But this game is for everybody. It's for people who like it tough and for people who don't. So if you want the difficulty you're more used to from like first edition or something else, try one of these variants.
Here's another tip that came to mind while talking about this. Hey, GMs, if you want, you know, and you might need to have your GM screen up and stuff, but it's okay to fudge roles here and there to maybe save a player or make things more dramatic. Just don't do it so often that you're taking over the story.
Yeah.
A nudge here and there to maybe keep the player safe, or maybe take a monster out of combat, you know, an extra attack early. You know, they're down to 15 HP, but it was a big crit and really amazing and everyone's excited. Maybe it's okay if the monster dies right then and there. That's okay. Have fun. Tell a fun story. Get everyone excited.
Yeah, and just to piggyback on that, hey, GMs, it's also okay if you never fudge a dice. If you kill the players when the dice says 2.
Absolutely. One thing I used to do when I was running in person is I would roll behind a screen, except for when it came to a big, tough boss fight. That, I put down the screen, and I rolled out in the open, and I said, I'm not saving you on these. This is all up to you.
That's fantastic. I love the drama that creates.
Yeah. I think, it definitely added to the feel of everything going on. So that's a bunch of tips from us. We know there's a lot more tips we could cover. If you have tips for people, feel free to share them in the comments here or in Discord or on our Facebook page. And if we get enough tips, maybe we can even do a second episode, compile all those together and have even more tips and tricks for people. But I think this will cover a lot for people who have just started or are still kind of fresh to the game.
One last thing for all you wonderful listeners out there. In the first episode of this mini-series, we did a short little skit where we kind of role-played the first step of the Queen of Wolves and her path to redemption. And then we said maybe we'd keep doing that for episodes 2 and 3. Well, episode 2 started to get a little long, so we just wholesale cut it. But I was thinking, I was like, man, that was really fun. And if that was fun for me, I bet that was fun for the listeners. So we're going to put together a one-shot to kind of show the Queen of Wolves story and to get some new players in front of the game with D20s in their hands so you can watch them learn 2E and maybe learn along with them if you're new. But that's all we have for you today. Make sure you check out the rest of our content on the No Direction Network. If you like the show or any of our other blogs or shows, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/nodirection because it's the support of our patrons that make this all possible.
Until next time, I'm Luis.
And I'm Lauren.
Thanks for listening to Legend Lore, and as always, it's been legendary.